When I decided that this was going to be the year that I did something about my love of rock music and create a podcast, website, Instagram and Spotify account, I didn't expect that the first half of the year would be filled with so much great new music. As we race past the halfway mark, I thought it would be a great time to review the music that's come out to date. To be honest, it has been almost overwhelming trying to keep up with everything. I'm actually hoping things might slow down a little bit in the second half of the year, and it does appear that this may be the case. If that does happen, that's not such a bad thing, as it will give me more time to devote to listening to all the music that has come out so far, including some albums that I just haven't had time to listen to in enough depth yet. Let's kick this off by going back to episode 4, where I spoke about a number of singles and albums that had just been released or about to be released. I'll give you some reviews, news, and chart details on those releases. Since I was a little boy with a toy gun, never really wanted to be number one. I reviewed Foo Fighters' Medicine at Midnight, described by Dave Grohl as their Saturday Night Party album. The album was well received and topped the charts in Australia, Austria, Belgium, Croatia, the Netherlands, Germany, Ireland, New Zealand, Portugal, Scotland, Switzerland, and the UK. It went top 10 in another 11 countries, including number 3 in the US. Interestingly, you'll notice as I go through chart positions of the albums mentioned, the US position on the Billboard charts is quite often lower than the position in the UK and Australia, even for US bands. Come on, America. If you get on board, we can really bring rock music back to the masses in a big way. Medicine at Midnight was listed at number 2 in Ultimate Classic Rock's 20 Best Rock Albums of 2021 so far. The critics liked it as well, with a score of 75 out of 100 on the Metacritic site, with 18 favourable reviews out of 23. One of the albums I need to revisit in more detail is Walking Papers' The Light Below, which was released the same day as Medicine at Midnight. Walking Papers obviously doesn't have the profile of Foo Fighters, so I'm not sure if or where this charted, and I can't seem to find it on Metacritic, but it did have some strong reviews, and it's rated 4.7 out of 5 on Amazon from 52 customers, if that counts. I did enjoy my initial listens, and I feel like it is one of the albums that will reward multiple listens, so I'm going to do just that as soon as I finish making this podcast. Kings of Leon released When You See Yourself on March the 5th. It topped the charts in Australia, Austria, Ireland, Scotland and the UK, and went top 10 in a further 9 countries. It just missed the top 10 in the US, peaking at 11. My expectations were high after being a big fan of the song The Bandit, which was released prior to the album. The Bandit seemed to harken back to earlier work from the Kings, which I was happy with after being disappointed with their most recent album before this, Walls. When You See Yourself does have some high points, particularly in the first half, but some of the second half didn't grab my attention, and overall it wasn't quite the return to form I was hoping for, but perhaps it's a step in the right direction. It ranked number 8 in Ultimate Classic Rock's 20 Best Rock Albums of 2021 so far. On Metacritic, it scored a fairly solid 69 from 19 reviews. Hoping might really blow up big and bring rock to more public attention was Greta Van Fleet's The Battle at Garden's Gate, which was released on April 21. The chart performance was solid but unspectacular, however. Only one chart-topping performance in Belgium, and somewhat unusually, just a top of 42 in Australia, but top 10 positions in 8 countries, including number 7 in the US and number 8 in the UK. This is among my favourite albums of the year. It's a winner in my books, and the cherry on the top was the inclusion of the epic song Weight of Dreams as the closer. It's a perfect album closer. It was previously known as Black Flag Exposition and featured a different set of lyrics from a song titled Lay Down, Candles in the Rain, written by Melanie Safka, released on the album Candles in the Rain in 1970. The instrumental part was written by the band. Check out Black Flag Exposition live on YouTube if you get the chance. To me, this is what new/old rock should sound like, with a superb closing guitar solo from Jake Kiska. He should be a guitar hero for the next generation. It ranked equal 14th in Ultimate Classic Rock's Best Rock Albums of 2021 so far. You'll notice I've mentioned that article a few times and will throughout this podcast.
Got
It's an album that did achieve some chart success, was the third effort by one of my favourite new artists of the past 10 years, Royal Blood with Typhoons, which was released on April 30. With 32,000 chart sales, including 24,000 on physical formats and the most digital downloads in the first week of release, the Brighton UK duo outsold the rest of the UK top five combined to collect their third number one spot on the official album chart. It went top 10 in 9 other countries, including number 5 in Australia, but only reached number 48 on the US Billboard charts. This album went into more of a dance rock mode than its predecessors, but still packs a punch on tunes such as the title track and album highlight Boilermaker, which is named after a cocktail rather than a tradesperson. It was produced by Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age, or he pronounces it Josh Homme. I think it should be Josh Homme from the French pronunciation, but there you go. The album has a rating of 77 out of 100 on Metacritic. Weezer have certainly been busy boys over the past couple of years, releasing 2 albums in 2021, which makes it 6 albums in just over 5 years, which is positively 1970s-esque. First up this year was OK Human, released on January 29, 2021. Wikipedia states, featuring a Baroque pop-influenced sound inspired by albums such as Harry Nilsson's Nilsson Sings Newman, 1970, and the Beach Boys' Pet Sounds, 1966, the album was recorded entirely with analogue equipment and features a 38-piece orchestra. The album was preceded by the lead single, All My Favourite Songs. The album received generally positive reviews from critics with a Metacritic rating of 75. It didn't chart particularly well, with number 41 in the US being amongst its better positions. Their second album for this year was Van Weezer, released on May 7, 2021. Again from Wikipedia, featuring a classic rock and hard rock inspired sound, the album was announced in September 2019 with an original release date of May 2020, coinciding with the announcement of the band's participation in the Hella Mega Tour alongside Green Day and Fall Out Boy. However, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the tour was delayed indefinitely and Van Weezer's release was delayed until May 2021. And I was one of the victims of the tour not going ahead. I was meant to see that in Melbourne at Marvel Stadium, but unfortunately it was cancelled. The album debuted at number 22 on the US Billboard 200 chart with first week sales of 18,600. It reached its peak at number 11 on the chart. It has a rating of 67 on Metacritic, and in the Ultimate Classic Rock article, they decided to award the two albums equal fifth. Cheap Trick may have been around since 1973, but they have been in great form in recent years, and this year's release, In Another World, that came out on April 9, is another worthy addition to their catalogue, which is now 20 albums deep. They haven't strayed too far from what brought them fame in the late 70s onwards, but just updated a little for current times. It didn't chart well, apart from in Scotland, where it reached number 5, and hats off to the Scots, they seem to love their rock, and a lot of the albums I'm discussing charted highly there. It has a mark of 67 on Metacritic, and our friends at Ultimate Classic Rock ranked it at equal 14th with Greta Van Fleet and Styx. Another classic rocker in great form still in 2021 is Alice Cooper. Alice's album Detroit Stories came out on February 26. The album is his 21st solo and 28th overall studio album. It topped Billboard's top album sales chart, debuting at number 1. It was the first chart topper for Cooper in the 29-year history of this chart. Detroit Stories notes many influences from traditional hard rock origins in Detroit. She started shaking to the bomb music, yeah, her life was saved by rock and roll. On the Billboard 200, its highest position was number 47, consistent with the other albums mentioned not charting highly in the US. Around the world, it reached the top 10 in 7 countries, including number 1 in Germany and number 3 in Australia and Switzerland. It has a solid 72 on Metacritic and was number 10 on Ultimate Classic Rock's list. Now to one of my favourite releases of the year, the self-titled Mammoth WVH album. Mammoth WVH is the fine work of Wolfgang Van Halen, son of legendary guitarist Eddie Van Halen. The WVH comes from Wolfgang Van Halen, and the Mammoth part comes from an early name that the band Van Halen used before Van Halen, but after Genesis, which they changed upon discovering the British band of the same name. Wolfgang plays everything on the album, and he has a great singing voice as well. I can't recommend this album highly enough. Go and listen to it as soon as you finish with this podcast. He has a knack for writing a hook into every song, and it's an extremely enjoyable listen from start to finish. It peaked at number 12 on the Billboard 200, and our friends in Scotland got it to number 15. It has a very solid 79 rating on Metacritic, the highest of the albums I've mentioned so far, and came in at number 4 on Ultimate Classic Rock's list. Distances, I will be with you. No matter what the distances, I will be with you. On February 12, the Pretty Reckless released Death by Rock and Roll. It featured two tracks with impressive cameos. One features Kim Thayil and Matt Cameron of Soundgarden, and now Pearl Jam. Other Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine, who certainly seems keen to help out fellow rockers, as he has collaborations with plenty of others. The lead singer of The Pretty Reckless is former actress Taylor Momsen. She is known for portraying the character of Cindy Lou Who in the film How the Grinch Stole Christmas in 2000, and Jenny Humphrey on the drama series Gossip Girl 2007 to 2012. Not that I've ever seen that. She has a great gritty rock voice, and with The Pretty Reckless has carved out a rock career with this, their fourth album. With the two released prior to this in 2014 and 2016 respectively, going to number 5 and number 13 on the Billboard charts. Death by Rock and Roll peaked at number 28, but went top 10 in 5 countries with a high of 4 in Switzerland, and you guessed it, Scotland. It reached number 6 on the UK charts and number 15 in Australia. For some reason, it only has 3 reviews on Metacritic and requires 4 to receive a rating. The 3 reviews it does have are 80 out of 100 from both Kerrang and Classic Rock magazine, and 60 out of 100 from NME, New Musical Express. I wasn't so keen on some of the tracks that veer towards country in the latter part of the album, but the better tracks are very good indeed. A new discovery for me is Aaron Jones and his album Child of the State. And Aaron is correct, that's spelt A-Y-R-O-N, so it's a bit like the comedy sketch that some of you might have seen with a substitute teacher with Aaron for Aaron. But I double-checked on this one, and it is actually Aaron. So Aaron is an American guitarist, singer, and songwriter. His music blends elements of grunge, rock, hip-hop, soul, and other genres. After years performing in local venues of his hometown Seattle with his trio Aaron Jones and The Way, he was noticed by producer Sir Mix-a-Lot. Yes, the Baby Got Back guy. And led an independent career until he signed with John Varvatos / Big Machine. His first major label album was released on May 21. Jones himself once described his own sound as like if Michael Jackson played guitar like Jimi Hendrix in Kurt Cobain's band, which is an interesting mix. The first two singles off the album, Take Me Away and Mercy, charted at number 5 and number 1 respectively on the US mainstream rock charts. One to keep an eye on. See my brother's phone. Evanescence released The Bitter Truth on March 26th. The album is the band's first in more than 3 years following 2017's Synthesis, as well as their first full album of new material since their self-titled third album in 2011. Believe it or not, it's been 18 years since their hit Ring Me to Life hit the top of the Australian charts and stayed there for 6 weeks. The album was a success, reaching top 10 in 9 countries, including number 1 in Switzerland, number 3 in Australia, number 4 in the UK, and number 11 in the US. It has a Metacritic rating of 78. Paul Stanley of Kiss fame took a musical departure this year and released an album of soul music. The record consists of 9 covers of 60s and 70s R&B classics, with a strong emphasis on Motown and Philly soul, and 5 originals. Good luck to Paul doing something he enjoys as a side project, but I'm not sure how much I need this album in my life. Maybe when summer comes around again, it might be a nice soundtrack to lazy days with barbecues. For now, I'm not sure that it grabs me. La 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 Kiss released an archival live album off the soundboard, Tokyo 2001, on June 11th. This album is the first of, quote, a new official live bootleg series from Kiss, according to a press release. The show was taken from a soundboard recording of their March 13, 2001 concert at the Tokyo Dome and includes one of the group's most short-lived lineups, with original members Paul Stanley, Gene Simmons and Ace Frehley, joined by drummer Eric Singer. After Kiss's original lineup reunited in 1996, drummer Peter Chris again left the group over a contract dispute just prior to the overseas leg of the band's 2000-2001 tour. Singer, who had replaced Eric Carr in the non-makeup version of Kiss in 1992, took over both the job and Chris's onstage Catman persona. I saw this farewell tour at Rod Laver Arena in Melbourne in April 2001, shortly after this concert was recorded. That concludes part one of my look at the first half of the year for 2021. For all things The Rock Curator, please go to the website, therockcurator.com. Be sure to also check out the Instagram page and the Spotify playlists. I look forward to you joining me again in episode 12 to hear the second part of 2021, the first half of the year. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.